success in navigating the system. She is relentless in her effort to help families from suffering financially, physically, and emotionally. She has testified 3 times before the New Jersey Assembly, once on Capitol Hill, met with New Jersey Attorney General staff, and testified to the President's Commission on Combating Drug Addiction and the Opioid Crisis. This Saturday, she was presented an advocacy award by NAMI New Jersey at its annual meeting. She also was presented with the 2018 Advocacy Award by the Mental Health Association of New Jersey. Welcome. Great to have you here, Rocky.
Thank you, Tracy.
So, Rocky, let's get into your Rocky journey.
Okay.
You want to discuss starting when you were very young.
Of course. First, I want to make it clear, a lot of what I'm going to share today is with my, not my prevention resources hat, but just as a 20-year resident of Hunterdon County. And my story is a story of I was able to get into recovery from alcoholism when I was 21 years old in February of 1982. I started drinking at the age of 12. I was raised in an alcoholic home. I don't recall feeling a lot of symptoms that are related to anxiety or depression, I think, because I started self-medicating at such a young age that I never really experienced a lot of the angst of adolescence. But quickly, by the age of 18, I was out of control. My behavior was out of control. I had car accidents. I was a blackout drinker almost every time I picked up a drink. My behavior became unpredictable. I started failing in school, attempting to go to college. The last year I was at University of Texas, I think I had a 1.75 GPA, so I just was not functioning at all. I wasn't enjoying my life anymore. I started to really suffer from depression and isolation. My behavior was so unpredictable that many times I was afraid to leave my dorm room, for example, because when you go into a blackout, you just don't, you literally don't remember anything that you've done. So when I was 20 years old, I actually had a very serious suicide attempt. So obviously at that point I was having symptoms of major depression. I did not make the connection that it was related at all to my drinking. And sadly, the professional care that I got also did not make that connection. So I like to speak a lot about what used to be called dual diagnosis, we call co-occurring disorders today, where you have a substance use disorder and a mental illness. So I obviously had severe depression because I took an overdose of pills and also cut my wrist. And I spent 3 months in a psychiatric hospital in a locked unit, and not once was my drinking ever addressed. And, you know, as you improve in these hospitalizations, they start to give you opportunities to go out on a pass, maybe not leave the property, but leave the unit, go on a walk, eventually leave the property to start to prepare you. And I would go out and drink on every single one of those occasions and come back to the unit drunk. And no one ever acknowledged that perhaps there might be a connection between the alcoholism and the depression.
Let me ask a question. When you were in the isolation unit,
mm-hmm.
obviously you couldn't drink.
Correct.
So what was that withdrawal from the alcohol like?
They had me heavily medicated.
Okay.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, a lot of it is a little bit like a fog.
Sure, I understand.
I actually do not have unhappy memories about that time. I met some fascinating people, mm-hmm. and I have to say it really opened my eyes to how special and overly sensitive people with severe mental illness are. I became very good friends with people that were really struggling, but I was heavily medicated, so I didn't suffer any kind of withdrawal.
But the first 3 months you were in isolation, you said?
I was in a locked unit in
locked.
The hospital.
Oh, you were not. Okay, mm-hmm. You were not in isolation.
Yeah.
You were just, okay, good. So you were meeting other people, and that was really the first time you had gotten any kind of help.
Yeah, actually, I asked my parents, so my mother and my father and my younger sister all saw a psychiatrist, and I asked my parents, I started to feel really depressed, and I asked them if I could see the doctor too, and my mother laughed at me and said, "You're the only sane one in this family."
Oh.
And that's what a good job I did of covering up mm-hmm. and pretending mm-hmm. to be somebody different than how I really felt. And now that I can look back on it, I think the action that I took was a desperate sign of asking for help.
Right. So you mentioned to me earlier, I think you said, first you were in one facility for 3 months and then another for mm-hmm. a year. What, could you go through that process
so
again?
When I left that facility 3 months later, because my substance use disorder had not been addressed, I wasn't any better. And I can recall lying in a bathtub one day. I'm sharing a lot of gory details,
well,
but
I think we're setting it up.
But I can recall laying there and holding a razor and thinking, I just wanted to do it again because nothing got better. So about 9 months later, my father, who was also an alcoholic, went to rehab, and I was asked to pick him up. My sister and I drank all the booze in the house the day before because they told us to remove it. And
I showed up
to pick up Daddy to start his new life, and I was not in very good shape. And they asked me to stay.
Oh.
And I call
wonderful.
It divine intervention.
They asked you. Wow.
Yeah, he must have shared with them about my...
Uh-huh. Okay. So
my
that
antics,
was,
and yeah. I came up with every excuse imaginable to leave, and they wouldn't let me leave.
Oh.
Obviously, I could have left, but I felt, I'll just stay and get everybody off my back. And so that was a 28-day alcohol recovery unit,
which is
what we call rehab.
Okay.
And then... I'm so fortunate, and I think that's why I am so grateful to have stayed sober all this time. So in February, I celebrated 37 years of continuous sobriety. But that began, and I received a full year of care. I left that rehab and was moved to a halfway house in New Jersey. That's how I ended up here. That was in Texas.
They knew
I needed to get far, far away.
Okay.
And I was in a setting that was safe. I was given clinical care for a full year before I actually went out on my own.
Uh-huh. And did they transition you slowly?
They transitioned me from a halfway house for 6 months to then a three-quarter house for 6 months. And then the three-quarter house, it was almost like what we call sober living today. It was a lot... less rules, a little less accountability, but I was still living in a safe, supportive environment with other people that were mm-hmm. trying to improve their lives. Today, that kind of setting is subject to drug testing. They didn't really have that then.
Okay.
But I had that for another 6 months.
So you stayed in New Jersey.
I did.
Since then.
Mm-hmm.
And after that year, how did you address the... Did the mental health issues linger?
So I was very fortunate that at the time my depression was a direct result of my alcoholism.
Oh.
And, you know, alcohol is a depressant.
Yes.
So, and at the time, I wasn't allowed to take any kind of medication for a mental illness. We were not allowed to take antidepressants or anything for anxiety. It was considered being a danger. It was considered not being truly abstinent.
Right.
And thank God that's changed, because I did struggle for the first couple of years. It was really, really difficult.
Right.
But I was very fortunate that over time my depression lifted. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until 2003, which I can get into, but it wasn't until some very traumatic life events started to happen that my depression came back, mm-hmm. and that time I was able to get it addressed. And to this day, I still take medication for depression.
Right. And jumping ahead, because one of the things that's great about you, Rocky, is because of your personal experience, you're able to give so much personal help. You've been there on so many different levels, and you have been basically an advocate for how long?
I would say I've been doing advocacy work, mm-hmm. the level that I'm doing it now, for about 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
I lived my life very quietly in recovery. There was a tremendous amount of stigma.
For mostly for the alcoholism?
For the alcoholism. And it was not appropriate to be shared at other settings.
Right.
For example, I had a dear friend who, you know, when the other mommies in her peer group at the nursery school found out that she was a recovering alcoholic, requested that she not be allowed to do the carpooling anymore. Now, she had been sober 20 years. So it really was not something that I did not share on a public level.
So if you had shared that, you wouldn't have been allowed to carpool either then?
Probably.
I'm assuming.
Yeah, and I was a substitute teacher.
That must have been really traumatic for her to.
Yeah.
Just.
But there are many, many stories like that. And
right.
People were not speaking out about that recovery is possible at the
right.
time.
Or they don't understand even today, right?
Yeah.
What recovery.
It's getting better.
Yeah.
I think the fog of stigma is starting to lift, but. Mm-hmm. It's still powerful.
It does get easier, though, I'm
mm-hmm.
assuming, a lot easier. I mean, I know people who are in AA, and they do have alcohol in their home for
mm-hmm.
when guests come over, and
mm-hmm.
they're able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that.
Well, we live in a drinking society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I worked in the corporate world for 10 years. I had to become comfortable with being around drinking.
Sure.
And to be honest, 95% of the time I have no desire to.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not an option for
mm-hmm.
me.
Right.
I'm not to say that it's not excruciatingly painful in the very beginning, especially when you're young.
Right, right. Okay, I guess we're going to go back just a little bit more into some of the horror stories if you're comfortable with
that's
that.
Okay.
Otherwise, we'll skip on ahead. Okay. At first, actually, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Good afternoon. This is Tracy Ivey of Mental Health Matters, and we're back with Rocky Schwartz, the Coalition Outreach and Family Support Coordinator of Prevention Resources. Let's talk just real quickly about Prevention Resources, what it is, what it does.
Prevention Resources is an agency. It's a nonprofit that's been based in Flemington actually since 1971. It used to be called Hunterdon Prevention Resources, and their mission is to prevent drug and alcohol use in the county, and it has grown into, you know, we provide services in Somerset, Hunterdon, Mercer. We have a family success center down in Asbury Park. We have a family success center here. We have a community recovery center. So we actually have many. We have educators that educate in the schools.
It's grown a lot in the last couple of years, too, hasn't it?
It's grown a lot, yes.
And for good reason.
Yes, there's a need.
So let's talk about what we did during the break just briefly. You said that for you, the alcoholism sort of brought on the depression and mental health issues. But for a lot of people, that's not true. They have both at the same time. How do you deal with that at Prevention Resources?
Well, first, we're a level one treatment center, so that means we just do outpatient.
Right.
We also work with family members who have a loved one with substance use disorder, and many times the family members are struggling with their own mental health issues, so we refer them to get help for that.
Okay.
In terms of the co-occurring issues where a person has mental illness and addiction of some kind,
right.
I think I'll call it substance use disorder just for the rest of the time, but I've seen statistics anywhere from 70 to 80% of people who have an addiction issue also have a mental health disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now, you know, all the evidence shows that they both need to be treated concurrently. A person who has major depressive disorder, for example, will not be able to stay abstinent from drugs or alcohol if that depressive disorder is also not treated.
Mm-hmm.
So it's critical that they both be addressed at the same time. In my case, I think I have a predisposition to be depressed, and I've just had the ability to kind of push through it for many, many years. I kind of felt sometimes like a dog paddling in water and just barely keeping your head above water until some very serious losses in my life, and just I needed to get some extra help. But I'm unusual. Most people have the depressive disorder or the anxiety disorder or bipolar, and they start using drugs or alcohol to help deal with the symptoms of the mental health disorder.
Right. So that,
you know, it calms you down
in a way.
Right. Right.
So if someone is dealing with their alcoholism now, and if the treatment for these depression and other mental health issues is medications, how does that work?
So now people are, it is very accepted and encouraged to take medication.
Mm-hmm.
There's something called medication-assisted treatment, for example. or we like to call it medication-assisted recovery, mm-hmm. because to put the positive spin on it, that many, many people need to take a medication, either to help with the cravings or a medication to control bipolar symptoms, medication for anxiety, and it's not discouraged anymore, like when I got sober in 1982. I mean, things have changed a lot, thank God. And almost, I would say, 98% of treatment providers do treat both at the same time.
Okay. So they're skilled in knowing which medications are best for someone
right.
who also has alcoholism.
And as you know, it's not always easy.
It's not, I mean, best. That's
you know, sometimes you got to be on a medication wealthy. For 4 to 6 weeks before you even know it worked.
Right.
So it really makes it challenging when someone is trying to get sober and they have all of these other issues going on. They
sure.
need a lot of extra support. Some places will say we're going to treat the mental health symptoms for a full year of being abstinent from drugs, illicit drugs and alcohol, before they can truly diagnose what's going on. Because sometimes it's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg?
Right.
Right?
And the symptoms of alcoholism might mask the
Absolutely.
ability.
I mean, you could become
diagnose.
Severely depressed from alcoholism.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the drugs, you know, you can present with manic symptoms, depressive symptoms, paranoia.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very confusing.
Mm-hmm. And that sort of ties into the next question I was going to get to, where you talk about it's difficult to navigate the current mental health system of treatment, and families are picking up the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
What does a family do?
Well, today the standard of care is so inferior to what it was when I was able to get into recovery. So, for example, the standard for alcohol and drug treatment was a minimum of 30 days.
Right.
Today, you're lucky if you get 5 to 7 days. So 5 to 7 days maybe can help deal with withdrawal symptoms from the drugs. There's no way you can diagnose someone's mental health condition. Then they're discharged. If you're lucky enough to be inpatient or in a detox facility, they're discharged to an intensive outpatient, hopefully, if there are spots available, if the insurance covers it. Many times the providers don't even have a spot for another 2 weeks. So you can imagine if someone gets out mm-hmm. of a detox and then they're waiting 2 weeks, the odds of them staying abstinent are almost impossible. The family members are the ones who are picking up the pieces. So I'll give you a very current example of someone I spoke to this weekend. Went to the emergency room here in our county for a psychiatric issue. About 14, 18 hours later was discharged. No discharge plan. About a 2-month wait to see a psychiatrist. So the family members are having to advocate for their loved ones to try to keep them safe, to try to make lots of phone calls, to try to find a place where there's a spot available. There's long wait lists for some places. Some families, if they can afford it, they will pay out of pocket. Many families are going bankrupt by having to pay for treatment out of pocket. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Now,
right.
one of the things that I do at Prevention Resources is the state created a brand new grant in April of 2018, so we just finished our first year, and it's called the Family Support Center, and we provide free support to family members who have a loved one with a substance use disorder. And I'll tell you, 90% of them also have some mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
So we provide support to families, help guide them through the system, help guide them through how do you find out what kind of insurance benefits are available. I mean, it's very difficult to do that when you might have just almost lost your child.
Yeah.
And you're running on empty. So we have family groups that meet here in Flemington twice a month, meet in Somerville twice a month. They can go on, actually, on sharing the hope on our Facebook page to see more details about the groups. But it's very important. Also, we can guide them to what other kind of support groups are here in the county. It's critical to try to alleviate the shame and the isolation that family members are feeling. And you also find out from networking with other parents, watch out for this place, right? Watch out for that doctor. You know, the reality is we learn from each other, and we learn from each other's, in many cases, very tough situations.
Very, very tough. So once again, that is Sharing the Hope. That's a Facebook page.
Correct.
Where people can get more information. There's no individual therapy, though, provided through this
we
grant.
We do. We're not clinicians, okay. But we provide peer support.
Peer support.
So like family-to-family support, and we do one-on-one sessions with people.
Oh.
We work with them if whatever they want. So some people, they want to text. Some people want to have phone sessions. Some people just want to keep in touch via email. They can also go on njprevent.com or call our office, which is 908-782-3909. And that is for Somerset, Hunterdon, Mercer counties.
Okay, let's give that phone number again.
908-782-3909.
Okay. And it's New Jersey Prevent what?
Is .com. NJPrevent.com.
That's another. Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
We also share the grant with another agency that provides the same service in Middlesex, Monmouth, and Union County.
Okay. So it was in April. Was it renewed then?
It was. It's a two-year grant.
It's a two-year grant.
So we are just into our second year. But it's wonderful that the state is recognizing that families need support. And it is because what we just talked about. Oh, my gosh.
There's something about every one person who has the disorder, how many family members are affected? 5 or 10 or it's some
unbelievable everybody amount. In the family is affected.
Right.
And because the care that was so freely given to me is not easily accessible anymore or affordable, the family members are basically running intensive outpatient programs and doing casework that we used to rely on social workers to do for us.
So that sort of brings me into this other new mental health parity bill that was signed into law in New Jersey by Governor Murphy in April.
Yes.
What is that all about, and why is that important?
So there's a federal law, the parity law, it's called, it's a longer name, but that was passed 10 years ago under President Bush. And Patrick Kennedy was a co-sponsor of that bill, and he's a resident of New Jersey now, which has been very helpful. And it essentially says that medical surgical benefits should be treated exactly the same or on par, thus the parity bill, as behavioral health, meaning substance use and mental health.
Okay.
So for 10 years, that law has been in place and has not been enforced. So families have been denied by their insurance companies treatment. It is a lot better, but it used to be they were charging separate co-pays for seeing a medical doctor versus seeing a therapist. They had different deductibles for mental health versus medical surgical.
Higher
deductibles,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So a lot of those have been resolved, but they're still denying treatment much higher for mental health and substance abuse treatment than for typical medical surgical. And so I joined what's called the New Jersey Parity Coalition about 7 years ago. They have been working for 10 years to get this bill passed. So we are a group of people from many different parts of the state. We have family members that have been denied treatment. We have representation from New Jersey NAMI, from the Mental Health Association of New Jersey, from the director of social workers and therapists. We have providers, different treatment providers that are on it, because they are getting tired of fighting to keep people in treatment. So we meet on a monthly basis. We've been working. We've got a lot of support from Partnership for Drug-Free Kids, from the Kennedy Forum, from a program that's called Parity at 10. It's based out of Washington, D.C. So we have been working to get a bill passed in New Jersey to enforce the federal bill.
Right. So basically it was on the books, but it was not enforced.
Correct.
So what, now that it's enforced, what does that mean to, can someone really fight their insurance company now?
So, well, technically as of today, it's not enforced yet. So the way the bill was signed in April.
Okay.
The New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance has 3 months to start to get a system in place to enforce it.
I see.
But
okay.
What the bill is going to require is that the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance, which is on every explanation of benefit that you get from your insurance company, also called an EOB. So if you see what's been paid for a bill, it says if you need resolution or anything, call the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. And they have basically not been doing anything.
Right.
A lot of people also don't call because they're too exhausted, they're too burnt out, they're too terrified, or the stigma also.
Right.
So now the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance is going to have to track all of these complaints, going to have to track the resolution. They're going to have to report that to the legislature on a quarterly basis. They're also going to ask any providers in the state, a state carrier, such as a Blue Cross Blue Shield that provides state benefits, that they are going to have to prove that they are following the parity law on an annual basis, which is huge.
So right. So now they have to have some accountability. Finally.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a little confusing, and I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, but this is only for New Jersey employees and New Jersey state plans, which is about 30% of people in New Jersey.
Oh, it's not for private people who have...
It is for private if
have a job
they, let's say they're a New Jersey a teacher, you know, and they're part of the teacher's union.
Right.
However, if you are a citizen and you work for a large company that has a self-funded plan, which many of us in New Jersey, we work for these large multi-state corporations, we are actually under the jurisdiction of the U.S. Department of Labor.
Okay.
However, Department of Banking and Insurance in New Jersey is trying to put some procedures in place to also assist those families.
Okay.
So the important thing is they claimed they never had a problem. They claimed people never called. We know we have a group of families that are called the denied treatment families that have collected information. It has been proven in other states that once you put this accountability into place, the insurance denials go down dramatically. New York State did it. Their percentage of admissions for inpatient care went from 80% denials down to 20%. Dramatic.
Right. There's nothing retroactive, though.
No.
You're not
going to...
Right.
No, and there's no compensation.
Right. But it's definitely a step.
Correct.
A big, big step.
Big step.
Right.
Big
right.
step.
Okay.
Can I just share one thing also about... So this group of families that's called the Denied Treatment Group...
Yes.
And we are always looking for more members. These are families in New Jersey who have been denied treatment for substance use or mental health issues. Sadly, 50% of our group have lost their children, but they're still fighting. And in addition to being on the Parity Coalition and getting this bill passed, we are also working with the Attorney General in New Jersey, and he is considering filing a suit, a consumer fraud case, because we buy insurance that says we will pay for these services, and then they don't provide them.
So this is, I just want to know, just getting into the weeds a little bit, when you say they don't provide it, what do you mean when somebody's denied service? They got it, and then they weren't reimbursed, or what kind of service would they be denied, for
so
example?
I'll give an example. I know someone who, actually was involuntarily committed in New Jersey, and the only way that law works is it's for psychiatric reasons.
Right.
Committed by a judge, which means you are required to be in treatment.
Right.
After 12 days, the insurance company quit paying and said that person doesn't need that level of care anymore.
I see, right. Mm-hmm.
The family ended up paying cash, borrowing from their retirement because they knew they were going to lose their child to keep them into treatment. So in complete disagreement with what a judge says.
Right. And the doctor's recommending.
It's strictly the insurance company calling the shots. Yep, the facility, and it's in all the clinical notes in this case, the facility said this person cannot be safely discharged at a lower level of care. And it didn't matter. The insurance company said, tough luck.
So that's your choice. Either you mortgage your
future. So that's
what
I mean.
Or you're out in a very dangerous situation.
Now, what's tough on families, if in a case like that, where let's say you're discharged at a place like Carrier, mm-hmm. because the insurance quit paying that day.
Right.
If the family member refuses to pick their child up, and I say child, this could be a 30-year-old,
sure.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But if the family member says, I'm not bringing that person home, they're not well, then they get a voucher to pay for one night in a motel, and they get a cab ride, which is the absolute worst place to send someone that's mentally unstable or that's been using, has a history of using drugs or alcohol.
So hopefully that's what this new parity law will address.
We hope so. That's the intent.
It's not going to happen tomorrow.
No,
it will take time. It's not even going to happen in the next 3 months. Because you're still working on their plan.
The Parity Coalition still meets every single month, mm-hmm. and what the focus is what can we do now, partnering with the Department of Banking and Insurance to help mm-hmm. ensure that this is going to be carried out properly.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you want more people to tell their stories to the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And why?
So the Department of Banking and Insurance says that nobody ever complains.
I understand.
And part of that is they never track complaints.
Oh.
And part of it is because people are overwhelmed, they're tired, they're just trying to keep their loved one alive, they don't want to take the time to deal with this. So now the Department of Banking and Insurance is asking us to collect as many stories as possible from people who have had to fight to keep their loved one into some kind of treatment, or people who have called the department and have gotten no resolution.
They're asking people on the Parity Coalition to reach out
to members in our community.
Okay. So if someone has a story, where should they go with that?
So if they have a story,
if they could
reach out to me, rschwartz, S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z, at njprevent.com,
mm-hmm.
or go on the Sharing the Hope Facebook page and send me a private message.
Okay.
That would be very helpful.
Okay. So you're already starting to collect?
Yes.
And you were, this award that you won, that must have been very gratifying. What was that for, an advocacy award?
So New Jersey NAMI mm-hmm. Gave me an advocacy award this last Saturday at their mm-hmm. state luncheon.
Mm-hmm.
Phil Lubitz, who's one of the directors, was so kind and said so many thoughtful things, and they just wanted to acknowledge the 7 years of work that I've been doing on the Parity Coalition and all the testifying that I've been doing, and just becoming vocal about this and trying to smash the stigma of it.
So how hard is it for you to testify? Are you comfortable doing that?
No.
It says here you've testified three times before the New Jersey Assembly,
mm-hmm.
once on Capitol Hill. Now, why did you testify on Capitol Hill? What group was that?
So Patrick Kennedy invited me to an event in 2017 that he had, the Kennedy Forum had, in the Senate building. Mm-hmm. In the actual Kennedy caucus room, which was where the Watergate hearings were, and it was just an overwhelming place to walk into, and I was asked to share my experiences about this.
Mm-hmm.
It actually wasn't testifying in front of a committee, but it was, we had members of Congress come in, and the intent was to educate all members of Congress and all the senators about the parity law and about how consumers are struggling and suffering.
Okay, great.
And in light of the opioid crisis, a lot more of the legislators are paying attention to this because...
It says here, yeah.
I mean, even with alcoholism, we're losing 70,000 people a year, and we're losing about 60,000 a year from opioid use disorder. That's not taking into account suicides. I don't have that number off my head. But, you know, legislators are starting to listen to this.
Right, because it almost sounds like all the numbers are going up.
All the numbers are going up.
Right. Right.
And it's impacting everyone. It's a
of
very,
course.
You know, these are very democratic illnesses, regardless of income or culture, gender. It's impacting everyone.
So to help overcome the stigma, how much, what seems to work best? Do you tell them your own personal story and how you have, you know, what you have done? Does that help so they say, well, she seems like a normal person? Is that...
Yeah, I share my story, and mm-hmm. I also share about the losses that I've had in my life. I mean, mm-hmm. everyone that was part of my life, my three closest people in my life toward the end of my drinking, my sister, my cousin, and my best friend are all dead today. So I share that experience. I share about what's going on in my community, and I think that I... Just by showing up and presenting myself, I can say this is really what recovery looks like, because we're bombarded with images of people laying in the street or sleeping on a bench or the, you know, the needle hanging out of their arm. I mean, that is not productive.
Right.
And I think it's so important for them to see there are millions of people living in recovery from all these illnesses that are productive members of society. We are business owners. We are great employees. We're productive people. We are raising families. We are in your community. And not everybody has the desire to come out like I am, but a lot more people are, because we're recognizing that we are a constituency of consequence.
Right.
And that we deserve to be listened to.
Right, right. Okay, on that note, we have to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Hello. This is Tracy Ivey back on Mental Health Matters with Rocky Schwartz, an outreach coalition outreach and family support coordinator for Prevention Resources. Rocky, we were talking about the bill, I believe, that the governor is going to sign into law in June about, tell us about,
Naloxone.
Naloxone, right.
It's actually not a bill, but
okay, tell us what's happening.
Next week, on June 18th, the governor has announced
That's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow? Is that tomorrow?
Yes.
You are correct. That
okay,
is tomorrow.
Okay, that's tomorrow.
Good commercial then. Okay. So tomorrow, not every pharmacy, but there are participating pharmacies, specifically here in Hunterdon, it's Redding Ridge Pharmacy on 8 Redding Road in Flemington. And I can give you the website. You can also look on nj.gov/human services/stop overdoses.
Okay.
And you can put in your zip code and see what pharmacies near you, because I know Warren County has quite a few, and so does Somerset County.
So what's going to happen?
They are going to get free naloxone, which is also called Narcan. No insurance card required. You don't even have to present ID. Anyone over the age of 18 can get 2 free doses of naloxone. Now, naloxone is the drug that can reverse an opioid overdose. And the Surgeon General of the United States, I heard him speak 2 years ago, and he said every resident should be carrying it on them because people are overdosing in libraries, they're overdosing in the street, and we have a Good Samaritan law in New Jersey that you are not going to get in any kind of trouble if you try to save somebody's life or call 911. So, and it's very expensive. Some insurance companies cover it, but tomorrow you can go to these pharmacies and get it for free.
So is this just a one-day
one-time
free?
Thing. Yes.
Tomorrow.
But it's huge. It's
and
a
so,
big
right,
event.
If you live in Hunterdon County, it's at the Redding Ridge Pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in a neighboring county, you can go on nj.gov/human services/stop overdoses.
Correct.
And find out where to get it so that, especially if you have a loved one who is involved with opioid use.
Correct.
And this is just a one-day
It's a one-time thing, but also our agency has Narcan trainings every month. They usually fill up because we can only take up to 20 people. Our next one is July 10th.
They fill up 20 people a month.
Mm-hmm.
Think of that.
We get a very interesting mix of people. We get business owners.
Uh-huh.
We get parents, mm-hmm. grandparents,
mm-hmm.
Nurses in the schools,
because mm-hmm.
the high schools, they're required to carry it, but not in the middle schools or the grade schools.
So all
the nurses come on their own time.
Mm. All the police and fire now have
all
it.
The police and fire carry
yeah.
it. Yes.
Right. But it has to be administered fairly quickly, I think, doesn't it?
It has to be administered quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the fentanyl that's in a lot of the drugs,
right.
many times it requires not one dose, not two doses, but sometimes up to 7 doses of Narcan to reverse it. Then the person needs to be taken to the hospital right away because it lasts about 20 minutes. And
they need
because
more.
What naloxone does is it attaches to the receptors that, and it prevents the opioid from going into your system. But that will eventually leave.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But it literally saves lives. I'm just now looking up to see what the numbers are specifically here for Hunterdon County. If you could bear with me a moment.
Oh, sure.
So there's also a very interesting website. It's called njcares.gov.
Okay.
And it shows, it's a daily dashboard. I'll give you an example. So far, there are 874 deaths in New Jersey.
This year. From opioid overdoses.
Specifically from opioids.
Mm-hmm.
There have been 3,294 Narcan administrations. And this number is low. It's only by police and EMTs.
So if we... That's how many more people are...
Because
yeah.
a lot of mm-hmm. parents are doing it in their
mm-hmm.
own home.
Mm-hmm.
There are over 1 million opioid prescriptions already in New Jersey.
Mm. Now, do you see that, you know, your Hunterdon Prevention Resources, do you see a huge growth in that particular area of abuse? Is it...
We see that, but believe it or not, we also see for the family support coordinators... Huge numbers coming in for alcohol and marijuana.
Oh, mm-hmm.
yeah. Just locally, I'm looking at this, looking at it right now, and this mm-hmm. is shocking to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Over 7,000 opioid prescriptions have been dispensed in Hunterdon County since January. Over 7,000. These are not pills; these are actual prescriptions.
Oh.
And we've already lost 2 people so far, and those numbers lag a little behind.
Right.
So the good news is the numbers of opioid prescriptions have gone down dramatically over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say dramatically, take that back, but they are going down.
Okay.
And that's a result mm-hmm. of Governor Christie put in a new law that you can only prescribe, I think, up to 5 days mm-hmm. of a prescription, and then you have to go see the doctor again. However... The deaths have gone up, and they're going up because of fentanyl.
Fentanyl.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, that can have an effect on a policeman or an...
It can have...
They can get close to the fentanyl, mm-hmm. and then they're overdosing.
Yeah. So I'm not sure about the naloxone that's going to be dispensed tomorrow in the pharmacies, but when we do our trainings in our office, you actually get gloves included in the package. Because mm-hmm. it is highly recommended that you have to have gloves on
mm-hmm.
because the fentanyl is so deadly that something the size of a piece of rice could kill you.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So in our last few minutes here, Rocky, is there anything else that we haven't touched on? You have a radio show of your own.
We do.
Tell me about that.
So I co-host a radio show with Jennifer Denlinger and Christine Yanoso.
Mm-hmm.
They also work as family support coordinators with me. We have a show that just started 2 months ago here at the Chamber. We're on Thursdays at 5 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
We have been posting the shows on Facebook Live so they can be viewed at a person's convenience. What we call it Sharing the Hope. So what we are trying to do is have guests come on and share the hope of recovery. We've had a lot of really interesting guests on. We've had the educators that go out from Prevention Resources and provide education in the schools. We've had One Voice, which is a coalition that works with the faith leaders in our community. Last week we had a remarkable young woman who's 33 years old. She got sober at 21. Terrible, devastating story. But she is now the executive director of a foundation that gives out scholarships for people in recovery. Because we know that whatever supports we can give people, education is a great one. that they're more likely to be able to maintain the recovery. You know, we got to help them get back on their feet, especially when someone gets discharged so quickly. We need more and more support in the community.
And do you find that because of your own personal experience that people listen to you more or you have more credibility?
I mean, I've been fortunate because the opportunities that have been given to me, for example, to testify in all these different places, I think that gives me some credibility. The awards, as uncomfortable as they are to receive, because that's not why I do this work, but that does give me some credibility also. So
I'm thinking also of the one-on-one effect when you're talking to a family and they know that you have been through it.
That's huge, yes. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. huge because, mm-hmm. You know, when you can just look somebody in the eye and they know that you're being authentic, mm-hmm. and you can also show them that there is hope. And even if your loved one doesn't get better right away, because I always believe that recovery is possible, it doesn't mean that our lives are over. It means that we can still live, we meaning the caretakers and the loved ones and the family members, that we can still live flourishing, productive lives in spite of some very painful things, like maybe having a child who's sitting in jail or maybe have someone who's living on the street. And we talk about that in NAMI all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
In our support groups.
Definitely.
People are living with just really unimaginable circumstances.
And they're hiding it, too. It's a big secret.
It's a big secret.
Yeah.
We say these are illnesses that people don't bring casseroles to your house for. But I think it is changing. I really do.
Well, I want to thank you for being on today, Rocky, for sharing the hope. And I hope a lot of people will get this message and we can continue to see things get better for all of us. Thank you again, Sharon.
Thank you for this opportunity, Tracy.
You're welcome. Take care. Bye-bye. Tune in next week for Mental Health Matters.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hunt and Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hunt and Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Iran says it will break the internationally agreed limit on its lower-enriched uranium stockpiles by the end of next week. This after unprovoked attacks on oil tankers in the Persian Gulf last week. About those attacks, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo tells Fox News Sunday,
"These were attacks by the Islamic Republic of Iran on commercial shipping on the freedom of navigation with a clear intent to deny transit through the strait."
We don't want war. We've done what we can to deter this. The Iranians should understand very clearly that we will continue to take actions that deter Iran from engaging this kind of behavior.
Egypt's Mohamed Morsi, the country's only freely elected leader, has died after suffering a heart attack while attending a court session on an espionage trial. That's according to Egyptian state TV.
The military ousted Morsi in 2013 after protests. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Texting enrolls you in recurring automated text messages. Message and data rates may apply.
Hi, I'm Frank Thomas, the Big Hurt. After I left baseball, I just couldn't stay in shape like I used to. Turns out, once you hit 40, your body has less free testosterone, and that can make it harder to get into shape. So I got back into the game with Nugenix. I'm feeling stronger with a lot more energy and drive. You want to get back into shape? Get Nugenix.
All you have to do is send one simple text.
Frank's right. Just text FORCE to 321321 to get a complimentary bottle of award-winning Nugenix, the number one selling free testosterone booster at GNC. Its unique man-boosting formula is powered by Testofen.